From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch, March 12th. The year is slipping by. We're glad to have you today. I'm Jody Heiss, a Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council. An honor to be sitting in today for Tony while he's still in Israel. And by the way, he hopes to join Washington Watch tomorrow from Israel, so you want to be sure to catch that edition tomorrow as well. All right, a lot to cover in the news today. We're going to be talking about former special counsel Robert Hur, who testified today on Capitol Hill, and he was responding to questions regarding his report on President Biden's mishandling of classified documents.
What I wrote is what I believe the evidence shows and what I expect jurors would perceive and believe. I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president unfairly. I explained to the attorney general my decision and the reasons for it. That's what I was required to do.
Well, that was the purpose of this hearing, to dive deeper into the unclassified documents, the classified documents that President Biden had at his residence. But in spite of that being the purpose of the hearing, many Democrats on the committee only wanted to talk about Donald Trump.
You want to be perceived, understandably, as credible. And so I want to first see if you will pledge to not accept an appointment from Donald Trump if he is elected again as president.
Amazing. They just cannot get over Donald Trump. Well, we'll be getting the full rundown on today's congressional hearing from Mike Davis. Of course, he's the founder of the Article 3 Project, and he will be joining me a little bit later in the program. And as voters continue to insist that immigration and the border crisis sits among their top concerns heading into this November's elections, the House recently passed the Laken Riley Act. Of course, that's named after the nursing student who is tragically murdered in Georgia. Georgia Congressman Mike Collins, who introduced the bill, will be joining me a little bit later in the program to discuss that important piece of legislation and where it currently stands. And much attention today was also focused on President Biden's budget proposals and what this is going to mean for our $34 trillion national debt. Well, by the way, that $34 trillion now is adding about an additional $1 trillion every 100 days.
You're running deficits of 1.8. 1.5, 1.5, 1.5, 1.5, 1.6, 1.5. It never comes down. You're basically locking in at least $1.5 trillion deficits for the next 10 years. That's what you're budgeting. And clearly, this is unsustainable.
These numbers are beyond our capacity to grasp. That was U.S. Senator Ron Johnson earlier today speaking to White House Budget Director Shalanda Young during a hearing on the budget proposal. Well, I'll be talking about this whole issue with economist Richard Stern from the Heritage Foundation a little bit later on. And a federal court has temporarily blocked the Biden administration from diverting $1.4 billion that was appropriated by Congress for building the wall on the southern border. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, who led this lawsuit against the Biden administration, will be joining me to discuss this incredible victory. So we've got a lot coming your way. And of course, while Tony is in Israel this week, I want to encourage you, deeply, strongly encourage you to join us as we are standing with Israel in prayer. This special prayer campaign is an effort for us as believers across this country to stand with Israel and to call for America to frankly repent and to stand with Israel. We're asking you to join us in this prayer pledge. You can do so, get all the details as well as get prayers that are coming daily from Tony while he is right now in Israel. You can join this campaign simply by texting the word Israel to 67742. Again, that's Israel, I-S-R-A-E-L, Israel, to 67742. All right, we've got a lot coming your way today. I want to encourage you, as always, not to forget our website, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources available there for you, including notes on today's program, as well as a lot of material from previous programs as well. So be sure to keep the website handy. It's a wealth of information there for you. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. All right, late last week, a Trump-appointed federal judge, Drew Tipton, he is from the Southern District of Texas, he ruled that the Biden administration must spend the $1.4 billion that Congress designated to be spent on building the southern border wall, that those monies cannot be diverted elsewhere. They were appropriated for that purpose. And so the judge is saying to the Biden administration, you cannot take that money and spend it elsewhere. Joining me now to unpack all this is Joshua Arnold. He's with the Washington Stand, senior writer for the Washington Stand. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hi, Jody. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, let's get into this. What was the Biden administration claiming authority to do with this money that was appropriated very clearly for building the wall?
Right. As you laid out, the specific phrase that was under dispute was the money for the construction of a barrier system along the southwest border. And Congress in the law said it could only be used for that. It couldn't be used for other purposes. Well, the Biden administration said that they had the discretion to use the money however they wanted to spend it, notwithstanding the text of the law, as the judge wrote in the opinion. This all goes back to what Joe Biden did on his first day in office in a proclamation where he said, it is the policy of my administration that no more American taxpayer dollars be diverted to construct a border wall. Now, that's misleading because divert means to turn from one course to another. This money was already in the course to build the border wall as Congress allocated it, and it was the Biden administration diverting it to other purposes.
Yeah, which is incredible to me to even think about. You know, I still scratch my head with trying to understand what kind of authority do they think they have, the Biden administration, to not utilize funds appropriated by Congress for a specific purpose. And then the president says, I don't want to use it for that. I want to use it for something else. Are they making any claim for the authority to do that sort of thing? Or are they just kind of themselves diverting that issue and deflecting it?
They were just retreating behind the word discretion. They have discretion to use this money. And so the projects they came up with were smarter border security measures, things like cameras and sensors, or even environmental projects along the border, flood control, that sort of thing. These were all provided for in other line items under the bill. Essentially, the judge read the law and said, nope, you're not allowed to do this. You have to do what the law says, and you can't just make up a new law as you go along.
So while the judge is making this kind of decision, which I think is a proper decision, I mean, it seems rather clear to me that Congress appropriated these funds very specifically. Was there any hint by the judge that this is but yet another example of the lawlessness that we seem to occur within this administration?
Yeah, he rebuked them pretty hard in the opinion for that. One line in particular that he said was, whether the executive branch must adhere to federal laws is not, as a general matter, an area traditionally left to its discretion. In other words, the administration can't just make up whatever law it wants to. That's Congress's job to pass the law. The administration's job is to execute the laws that Congress passed, and this administration is simply not doing it. The judge went and quoted from a 1993 court case by the Supreme Court called Lincoln versus Vigil. I'd never heard of this case before. I guess it had to do with Indian affairs and Indian health care policy. But in that decision, the court said, an agency is not free simply to disregard statutory responsibilities, which means if the law says they have to do something, the agency has to do it. The agency can't simply say, we don't want to do that, and then walk away. That's what the Biden administration tried to do here, and the judge slapped them down for that.
Yeah, and that's why we have rules. That's why we have laws in this country, and that's why we have three branches of government, one to create the law, the other to enforce the law, and the other to judge whether the law is being handled properly in accordance to what was actually created as law. And so, you know, we have these three equal branches, and yet it seems as though the Biden administration, the executive branch, wants to act as though they are the supreme of the three branches here. And this is why we are structured the way we are, so that one of the three branches does not run away in usurp authority that it does not have. So I'm really grateful that we have this ruling that's come out right now. Joshua Arnold, I want to thank you so much for taking time to join us today on Washington Watch. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Jody.
All right. Well, joining me now real quickly is Congressman Mike Collins. He's got a lot going on. In fact, he's on the floor voting right now, was able just to step off briefly for a quick few moments. Congressman Collins, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Congressman. Good to be with you.
Well, it's great to be with you. And in all fairness, I need to let everybody know, Congressman Mike Collins is my congressman. And I am honored to have him representing me. And it's great to have you on Washington Watch. You're doing a great job. You've had some very tough votes here lately. And thank you, Congressman, for standing in the gap for all of us. All right, you introduced, we've only got a couple of minutes left. You introduced the Laken Riley Act. Real quickly, tell us about that.
We did. You know, it does a couple of simple things. It just makes sure that law enforcement has an additional tool in their pocket to pull out and make a phone call to get DHS to get down there and detain these illegal aliens when they commit a crime of theft and deport these people. That if that law would have been in effect, Laken Riley would have still been alive today if it would have been in effect when he was out. Because about 3 days, 4 days before that, you know, he got pulled over and cited for shoplifting. And he was also cited in New York. So this guy is a known criminal. He's just been traveling around from sanctuary city to sanctuary city, probably until his welcome was worn out. And, you know, wound up in Athens, Georgia. Third thing it does is if the DHS does not want to, Homeland Security doesn't want to come pick these folks up, or ICE doesn't, then the state can take them to court, federal court, and the federal judge can tell them to get out and get these people.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to me to think that a bill, which we're being told this bill is probably not even going to be picked up in the Senate. Why in the world would anyone have problem with detaining a violent criminal? That is beyond me.
Yeah, it is. You know, well, I think you and I probably, you know, think alike. We got common sense. But I don't want to get ahead of them, but we've got a pretty high-profile senator that's going to be announcing that they'll be taking this bill up and running with it and working on co-sponsors right now. You know, we had 37 Democrats in the House to go with us, so it was a good solid win here in the House. And I think
Congressman, we got about 10 seconds.
Well, I think you're going to see some Dems go with us in the Senate, and good Lord willing, we'll get it passed over there, Jody, and we'll get this thing on the president's desk.
Congressman Mike Collins, thank you for your hard work. Thank you for stepping off the floor to join us. All right, friends, stay tuned. Right after the break, we're going to be talking about the Biden's proposed budget for next year. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch Show. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, yesterday, President Biden released his proposed 2025 budget. It is a whopping $7.3 trillion spending spree that would see significant tax hikes for both individuals and businesses. But what is all this going to mean for the average working family? And how, frankly, how should Republicans in Congress react to this budget proposal? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Richard Stern. He's the director of the Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget at the Heritage Foundation. Richard, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, listen, just overall, first of all, we're going to go deeper into this, but your overall reaction to President Biden's proposed budget, and what does it reveal about this administration's priorities?
Well, in my mind, this is exactly the kind of assault on American middle-class families and hardworking Americans that you would have expected from this president, and that's a tragedy. So I think, you know, you brought it up, but it's almost $5 trillion of tax hikes over a decade. It's more than $2 trillion of more spending on the woke and green agenda, you know, all the kind of projects that Biden likes to do for his donors and friends and all of that. And I think to put it in perspective, that $5 trillion tax number, it's $36,000 per American family. And you don't have to file those taxes directly for it to show up in your wallet through higher prices, lower wage growth, fewer job opportunities, slower economic growth. So that's my highlight of the budget.
Wow. You could not have a worse highlight, I'll just tell you. It's frightening. It's stunning. It's angering to hear this type of stuff. You know, prices keep going up. Interest rates keep going up. And what is this administration's response? Well, let's tax more. And, you know, But even on top of that, the president wants to add even more spending to all of this. You know, this administration, Richard, talks about spending less. But in so doing, what they're doing is comparing reductions to the COVID years. But shouldn't voters see through this? How do we communicate what's really going on?
You know, the allure of free stuff is overwhelming. And that's part of what the left has peddled and Biden has peddled, is they say to you, don't worry about it. We're going to tax the wealthy, the corporations. We're going to tax foreigners, right? We're going to do all this kind of stuff. And the truth is, it's coming out of your wallet, right? You know, the wealthy large corporations, they don't pay those taxes. It's their businesses that pass those taxes through, either to workers or the consumers. There is no magic money tree that can come from. So, you know, I think that's what they do. That's what Biden does. It's this illusion that somehow the government can give you free stuff. Look, the government can print cash. It can't print food. It can't print clothing, a roof over your head. When the government prints money, taxes money, when it steals that money, it's stealing the fruits of your labors. It's stealing from everybody access to the real resources that give you concrete to build housing, right? That give you food that you can put on the table for your family. And so that's that illusion we have to break up for people and show them that the more spending, the more taxation, that's what drives, as you just said, prices higher, that drives people deeper into poverty. You know, a mortgage in this country used to consume the first year's interest payment 16% of a median worker's pay when Trump left office. It's 41% today. That's because of Biden's policies.
Wow. Oh, yeah, the president's priorities, I think, through all of this clearly demonstrate a massive difference between the two parties. When you look at all this, and I mean, you've already mentioned so much, but what, if you can hone it down, what is the main thing that jumps out at you with this proposal?
I think the main thing is this budget is a statement of a lack of faith in Americans, right? It's a statement that Americans can't manage their own lives, that you are not entitled to the work that you've done. You're not entitled to the money that you've earned, that Joe Biden is, that the government is, right? It's an attempt at stealing more of that you've earned to redirect it to their friends, to donors, to the administration, that somehow you'll be better off if the government takes your money and gives it to friends of the administration. That's what jumps out to me clear as day in everything in this budget.
Wow. Well, that's a huge thing that hits you in the face there. There, I would think that there has to be something for working families in a budget this size. Is there any good news in it?
Well, I would say it depends on how you slice it, right? So there are certainly things in this budget that the sticker says, oh, this is for working families, right? There's things in there that Biden has trumpeted as saying, this is money we're handing out to people. But the truth is, then you have to say, okay, where'd you get that money from? That's the problem, right? Is it all of those things that are being done in this budget that look like handouts to families are coming from the other end through higher prices, through taxing businesses that employ people? So what good is it if the government hands you a couple thousand dollars if you lost your job because of that? If prices are 20% higher so the government could get that money to hand you, what's the point in handing you the money? There's no deregulation in this budget, right? There's nothing in this budget that promotes families, that gives people back their freedom. There's nothing in this budget that's something that gives us back our freedoms to our religious communities or gets rid of the assault the administration has on the fabric of civil society and churches, right? So there's nothing like that I would say is just solidly good for people. The best there is in there is some redistribution that looks good, but again, is an illusion that hides how it clubs people over the head to get that money in the first place.
And at the end of the day, none of this is sustainable. We cannot keep going down this path. Agreed?
Absolutely. You know, the debt right now is already $260,000 per American household. It's America's second mortgage, and it's not secured by a home. It's money the government stole from you and lit a match to. This budget would add half again that much to the debt. You'd be over $400,000 in debt per household by the end of this 10-year budget.
Unbelievable. So are we at what point, and we've only got about 45 seconds, so this is maybe an unfair question with this short of time, but at what point do we cross a line in the sand? 50 trillion, 100 trillion? When is the breaking point?
You know, I would say this. It's hard to know whether there's a firm breaking point, some kind of apocalyptic debt crisis, but I'll ask a different question. Do you feel like we've had 25 years or so of malaise? Do Americans feel like we spent the last generation sputtering, losing our way, where people feel like they can't get ahead, can't build a future, can't buy a home, start a family? It's because of the government's debt. It's because of the government's spending, its taxes. That's what's happened, right? It's been a slow break. It's been the frog boiling in the pot. That's what's been happening.
Richard Stern from the Heritage Foundation, thank you so much for breaking this down for us. We appreciate it. Look forward to having you back on. All right, friends, after the break, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey will be joining me discussing a federal court win regarding the border wall. Stay tuned. We'll be back right here on Washington Watch.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in for Tony, who is in Israel. He hopes to be back tomorrow from Israel and bringing a show from there to Washington Watch, so you don't want to miss that. All right, a federal court, as we discussed a little bit earlier, a federal court has temporarily blocked the Biden administration from diverting $1.4 billion in funding that was appropriated by Congress to build a border wall. The decision follows a January 2021 proclamation by President Biden terminating the Trump national emergency at the southern border. And he then, at that time, ordered a pause on the construction of the border wall. Well, some attorneys who had some guts, attorney generals from Missouri and Texas, to be specific, they sued. And they were arguing that reappropriation of funding was illegal and that it violated the separation of powers, like we were talking about a little bit earlier. Well, joining me now to discuss this is one of those attorneys generals, Andrew Bailey from Missouri. He is the one who actually led this lawsuit. Attorney General Bailey, always an honor to have you on Washington Watch. Thank you for coming back on.
Hey, thank you so much for having me and for covering this important story. This is an enormous win for the rule of law and the separation of powers and to try to stop this Biden invasion.
Well, it is a huge win. And let me first of all say congratulations. This would not have happened had it not been for great leaders like yourself stepping up to the plate. So tell us what this court ruling will require.
Well, this puts an end to the Biden administration's attempt to vex, harass, and delay the construction of the border wall that Congress specifically appropriated money for. The appropriations power matters. It's the power of the purse. It's the power given by the Constitution to the Congress as a check and balance on executive authority. The executive is supposed to enforce the laws that are written, and Congress writes those laws. And Congress commanded the president to erect new border barrier systems, period. But what President Biden did, as he pointed out, is on day one in office, sign an executive order saying, well, fences don't work. We're not going to build any more border walls. Dripping with irony, considering that in 2006, as a United States senator, Senator Biden advocated and supported the Secure Fence Act. So back then he thought border barrier systems worked. But then when he takes office as the chief executive and is charged with enforcing law, he changes his tune. Luckily, the court did the right thing here, looked at the language in the appropriations bill, the commandment that Congress had issued, and said that the president is not allowed to spend your tax dollars in order to vex, harass, and delay the commands of Congress.
Yeah, this is a huge decision. What does this say, if anything, particularly to the issue of this administration explicitly ignoring constitutional obligations to abide by Congress's appropriation laws? Did this ruling say anything, a slap against this ignoring congressional appropriation laws?
It absolutely is an admonishment of the chief executive to follow the laws as written. You don't get to make up your own. If you want to change the law, go to Congress and get the law changed, but you don't get to do whatever you want. This isn't a dictatorship. That's why we have the separation of powers. The Constitution is intended to be a structural diagram upon which it creates the playing field upon which we play the game of democracy. And the idea is to protect the government, protect us from the government. And the government exists to protect our rights. And one of those rights is to have a sovereign nation. And that means securing the southern border. Look, there have been 1,100 reported incidences of human trafficking in Missouri in 1 year alone, making Missouri now the fourth worst state in the nation for human trafficking. Because of our geography at the crossroads of the nation and our extensive interstate system, we've had more than 1,500 deaths from fentanyl poisoning, 43 innocent children who died from accidental exposure to fentanyl. These harms are directly attributable to Biden's open border policies. This isn't an accident. Biden has the tools on the books, but he refuses to use them. And this is just one case in point where Congress gave him the money, gave him the materials, gave him the commandment, and he ignored it. And it undermines the rule of law and the credibility of our entire system of government when you have this lawless chief executive refusing to do his job.
It most certainly does. And even they came after you. I mean, you stood in there, but the Biden administration was arguing that you had no standing to even bring this case to begin with. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals thought otherwise.
Yeah, tell that to the parents of the 43 children who lost their lives from fentanyl exposure. And I think the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals recognized that the state of Missouri is a border state at this point, because every policy decision the Biden administration has made has been to pervert the law, undermine the rule of law, and open the border. There are now more illegal border crossings than there are citizens of my home state of Missouri. So this is clearly a crisis point. This is, I believe, the first time that a state has taken Biden to court over a border issue and won. So this is a major victory in support of the border wall that we know works, because President Trump used the same tools that were on the books to reduce illegal border crossings by more than 90%. So the tools and the resources are there. It just requires a chief executive who's willing to enforce the laws that are given to him by Congress.
And there's got to be some accountability for those who refuse to enforce the laws that are there before them. And that is something that I think definitely needs to be exposed. This is part of the problem that aggravates Americans, where there appears to be a two-tiered system. Attorney General, I can't thank you enough. I thank you for having the guts to stand up initially on this issue, for the staying power to go through it to the end, and for having a tremendous victory. We all are deeply appreciative of your stance. Thank you. And thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Jody, thank you so much for having me on.
Always a pleasure. All right, friends, with much more coming your way after the break, I'll be discussing the special counsel Robert Herr's testimony before Congress today. It was powerful, and you don't want to miss it. We'll be bringing it straight to you after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
All right, welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, it's been a busy day, friends. It feels to me, quite frankly, we've already had a busy week worth of news, and it's only Tuesday. There's just more and more seems like to bring your way each and every day. But there was testimony today before both the House Judiciary and House Oversight Committees where former Special Counsel Robert Hur testified that President Biden willfully retained classified materials, but that he considered the president's memory and overall mental state when he elected not to bring charges for this offense. Wow, sounds like walking both sides of the issue. The ex-special counsel drew fire from both sides of the aisle as Republicans were pressed for answers on his decisions not to file charges. Democrats, on the other hand, of the committee wanted to make everything today about former President Trump. And even as they complained about Hur's portrayal of President Biden as, quote, an elderly man with a poor memory, they kept pushing against Trump. What an incredible hearing it was. Well, joining me now to discuss all of this is Mike Davis. He is the founder of the Article 3 Project. He previously served in all three branches of government, including as chief counsel for nominations to Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley. He also served in the Department of Justice during the George W. Bush administration and on the staff of Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. So he brings to us a world of background and information. Mike, always great to have you on Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So your overall reaction to former special counsel Herr's testimony today, how did he come across?
Well, it's what I expected when Merrick Garland picked Robert Herr. I knew that nothing was going to happen here because Robert Herr is part of the Washington Republican establishment. He worked for Chris Wray. He worked for Rod Rosenstein. They worked for James Comey. So I knew that he was not going to recommend charges. But what Robert Herr did say in his report and his testimony is devastating for President Biden. President Biden knowingly, willfully retained classified documents illegally. He shared those classified documents with his ghostwriter. When they got caught and a special counsel was appointed, the ghostwriter deleted that classified recording of President Biden, then Vice President Joe Biden, sharing these classified records with his ghostwriter. That's espionage. That's obstruction of justice. And then Robert Herr acknowledged that President Biden lied to the American people when President Biden told the American people he didn't share this classified information with his ghostwriter. But Robert Herr essentially said that he's a lovable, demented old man, so we can't charge him with a crime.
Yeah, that's what's so disturbing to me about all of this. On the one hand, just like, because that what you said is the very thing that jumped out to me, that Herr came out and said he willfully kept these classified documents. He knew what he was doing. But then on the other side of the coin, he says, but he's got memory loss, so I didn't think we needed to bring any charges. How in the world can you make both of these claims at the same time? It seems like Special Counsel Herr is just really trying to walk a political line. Did he come across like that's what he was attempting to do?
Well, remember, Robert Herr is James Comey's protege, and James Comey did the same thing with Hillary Clinton's illegal home server with our nation's most classified secrets. Comey came out and said, yeah, Hillary essentially violated the Espionage Act, but no reasonable jury would find her guilty of that. So it's the same game that Robert Herr is playing here. I would say this about the Democrats and Joe Biden, who are outraged by Robert Herr saying what, you know, 85% of the American people already know, that he has diminished mental capacity. I would say that there is a slam dunk case of Espionage Act violations against President Biden. And Robert Herr did Biden a huge favor by not recommending that there is a criminal indictment against Biden when he leaves office, because the alternative would have been a recommended indictment instead of Robert Herr saying that essentially Biden has diminished capacity, which we already know.
Well, and that's what makes all of this appear to me, at least, and I'm sure millions of others, as a political maneuver more than anything else, because as you just said, apparent crimes were committed are pretty evident there. I mean, and he even admits that. He also admitted, and I wanted your reaction to this, Mike, he also admitted that President Biden is someone that a jury might consider as a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly old man just with poor memory. I'm not sure that a jury would go there. When looking at the evidence and looking at what happened, and then when you add to that, the Democrats, all they can say now with this re-election campaign is his mental capacity is fine. There's nothing wrong with him. So they're arguing that he is mentally capable of the office of president. But here we have former special counsel saying, oh, no, he's not. And your average jury would agree. They would just be sympathetic to this poor old man. Do you think a jury would go that way? Of course, it depends on where it is, I suppose. But your average American.
If Biden and his allies think that Robert Herr was wrong and he does have the mental capacity to stand trial, then the Trump 47 Justice Department can bring Espionage Act charges against President Biden after January 20th, 2025. Remember this, Merrick Garland is the person who made the decision to bring the unprecedented charges against President Trump for the non-crime of a former president having his presidential records in the Office of Former President, which is allowed by the Presidential Records Act. The former president's office is guarded by the Secret Service. He gets federally funded staff. They have security clearances. Contrast that with Biden, who had five stashes, at least five stashes, maybe six, of stolen classified records from his time as vice president, even his time as a senator, meaning he had to have stolen these classified records out of the Senate skiff. And Merrick Garland did not bring charges against his boss, Joe Biden.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I've been in the skiff many, many times as a member of the Oversight Committee and doing our work. But to think that that type of information was taken even from a skiff, that's a powerful thing to think about. And why there was no accountability for doing so is, quite frankly, beyond belief. Now, you've been through a lot of these transcripts. When you look at what kind of fumbling or whatever it may be it dates or miscues or whatever, what do you think is most damaging to the president of what you've seen?
I mean, the most damaging to the president is there's the transcript of his recording with his ghostwriter, where then former Vice President Joe Biden tells his ghostwriter he's giving him classified information, knowing the ghostwriter is not supposed to have this classified information. And then the ghostwriter destroys this evidence of Biden's Espionage Act violation when Merrick Garland appointed Rob Hur to investigate Biden's Espionage Act violations.
Wow. Yeah, that's damaging for sure. So I look at, you know, the parts of the hearing, and I was not able to see it all by any stretch, but the snippets, if you will, of what I've been able to see and read, it seems evident to me that both Republicans and Democrats were upset at her, but for different reasons. Is that an accurate portrayal of the sentiment within the room?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the Democrats should be very happy with her because he saved Joe Biden's butt before the election, because Robert Hur simply said what we all know, that Biden has diminished capacity, instead of recommending an indictment for the Espionage Act violation.
Yeah, and going down that path, that's what Republicans wanted answers for, seemed like all day. Why did you not charge President Biden? What did you make of his answers with that?
I think his answers were very political. I think that he laid out very clearly that President Biden willfully retained and shared national defense information as the former vice president, and that is clearly a violation of the Espionage Act. And then Robert Hur tried to protect Biden by saying that the fact that Biden has diminished mental capacity goes to the willfulness angle, that maybe he didn't know that he had these documents or didn't willfully take them. What he doesn't explain, what Robert Hur doesn't explain, is how does Robert Hur explain that Biden on tape shared classified information with his ghostwriter, knowing it was illegal, and then that ghostwriter destroyed that tape?
Yeah, and no answer for that.
Well, I think the answer is that I think there's a very good reason that Merrick Garland picked Jack Smith, a political Scud missile, to go after Trump for Espionage Act violations that didn't occur, because Trump's allowed to have those records under the Presidential Records Act. And why Merrick Garland picked someone like Robert Hur, the protege to Rod Rosenstein and Chris Wray and James Comey, to go do the cover-up for Joe Biden.
Okay, well, that's where I wanted to ask you next. The similarities, the differences between how President Biden is being treated versus former President Trump. Can you lay that out a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear under the Presidential Records Act that the former president can access his presidential records any time he wants. He shall have access to his presidential records. And presidential records are any document created or received by the White House, by the president or his White House staff. And that includes classified agency records sent to the president or his White House staff to advise the president. And think about it this way. We're supposed to trust the president of the United States with this classification authority and declassification authority. And then when he leaves office, we give him a federally funded office of the former president, federally funded staff, Secret Service protection for life 24/7. And we give him this materials, and they're going to charge President Trump for presidential records he's allowed to have under the Presidential Records Act, presidential records that never leaked until the Biden Justice Department did their illegal raid on the office of former president, going to a biased magistrate judge, Bruce Reinhardt, who had recused from Trump's civil lawsuit versus Hillary Clinton 6 weeks prior, because that magistrate judge, Bruce Reinhardt, bashed Trump on Facebook. All of a sudden, that bias magically goes away when the Biden Justice Department goes to him and does this raid on Trump after Joe Biden was complaining to the Washington Post that his Justice Department wasn't going after Trump enough. And then they're going to, this Biden Justice Department is going to cover up for Joe Biden for stolen classified records he had as senator and vice president, stolen classified records that he used for his financial advantage. He got an $8 million advance to write his book. That's why he had some of these stolen classified records. The New York Post's Miranda Devine also reported that Hunter Biden almost certainly used stolen classified records to write a 23-paragraph geopolitics memo to Burisma to secure millions of dollars in corrupt funding to the Bidens. The Bidens stole classified records and used them for their financial gain.
Wow. Such disturbing news, Mike. But listen, everyone listening and watching right now needs to be taking this in, because even and this came out today too, while the purpose of this hearing was to explore, investigate what the things that you just talked about, the what happened with the Biden administration with these classified documents. Ranking Member Jerry Nadler, for example, he opened his whole thing by playing a video of Trump. These people are wanting to paint a picture that Trump, President Trump, was the criminal, that Biden is nothing but a political witch hunt. Are they going to be able to get away with this narrative?
No, because the American people are waking up to this. And this lawfare and election interference is going to end on November 5th, 2024, when the American people say, we get to decide who's the president of the United States, not Democrat prosecutors and Democrat judges and Democrat juries and Democrat hellholes like New York, D.C., and Atlanta. We get to decide the American election, and it's not going to go well for the Democrats.
Well, and last statement slash question, however this comes out, the former special counsel Herb specifically said today that he did not exonerate President Biden. That's a powerful statement in and of itself. But did anything from today's testimony expose why it makes little sense for former President Trump to face charges while President Biden does not? Anything?
No. And President Biden's espionage case is so much worse than anything that Jack Smith is alleging against President Trump. Even if you take everything that Jack Smith says at face value and as true and in the worst possible light for Trump, everything that Biden did was so much worse. Biden profited, his family profited from stolen classified records. President Trump had his presidential records in the office of the former president, guarded by the Secret Service, funded by Congress, and they never leaked until the Biden Justice Department did their illegal raid to go get back these documents. And the reason they did this is because Trump declassified the Crossfire Hurricane records that are so damning for Obama, Biden, Hillary, the deep state. That's
Mike
why
Davis.
They did this raid.
Mike Davis, Article 3 Project, thank you so much. Powerful, powerful stuff. Thanks for your incredible work. All right, friends, that wraps up today. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.